Meow.
Meow.
Woof. Meow.
Woof. Trigger warning, this is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin thud of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Can you feel it? Is it working? Hugo, Angela.
Yeah, I can feel it. I can feel
all
it.
Right,
I sure can
all right.
Feel it. It's actually, you know, flowing my hair, and we'll get to that. I can feel it all the way from Mexico City.
Some noises coming through.
Yeah, I'm feeling it. I'm feeling something very deep down inside of me. And the door creaked open, and there he was, handsome as ever, like a giant melting fat carrot with fake hair. He stood there in front of me like a tall stallion, with his oily orange skin glistening in the sunlight as if he were a shaggy Cheeto, his hair unkempt and messy like a gorgeous rat's nest.
Wow, that's so sexy. What are you reading?
I am reading an erotic gay novel, Trump's Temptation, The Billionaire and the Bellboy. It is a number one on Amazon's gay erotica charts right now. And the reviews are in, and I just wanted to share one with you because this is something that I think is kind of general interest. One reader wrote, "This is the most amazing thing I've read in my life. It was a beautiful love story from start to finish. And I recommend it to all who enjoy both BDSM and the joys of crazy old men with fake hair."
This is amazing.
This would be so much.
Oh my God, this is how we make America great again.
If this were an actual
there
book...
There has to be a dead air for a second.
So what's the story behind this? Tell us more about
What's behind it is
a novel.
What's behind it is that his behind flapped behind him like a mouth-watering stack of pancakes. And my hunger for pancakes has never been stronger. This is the change. This is the hope and change we finally were looking for.
This is amazing. I'm reading this Guardian article you sent me, and apparently this beat out 50 Shades of Grey recently. This person just decided to write this very sexy sounding little novel, and just threw it out on Amazon, and it's kind of going wild.
It's wild, all right. That's the term I use. It wild. It's a steaming, teeming, freewheeling sexuality that's bursting forth from my soul. That's what I was looking for.
So this is about only 10 pages long, and the book is about this tawdry love affair with a bellboy and Donald Trump. And the book opens one fateful afternoon in summer of 2012 as Daniel's hero is working as a bellboy at the Trump Hotel in Hong Kong. "I come from a very small farm town in Michigan, and this was my first time in a big city," he writes. "I was stacking someone's tacky luggage when the door behind me swept open. My loins trembled as the scent of toupee adhesive and spray tan swept through my nasal cavity. I wanted nothing more than to turn around and see the golden god behind these scents, but I couldn't move. I was frozen."
Wow.
that's mouth-watering.
You know, coming from a mostly straight guy, it's... you know, this could be the turning point.
This could be what takes him all the way to the White House.
Yeah. Yeah, this could be it. You know, he's always got a lot of heat from, you know, the whole LGBT community and gay people and all kinds of people who like a different kind of progress. And he's a conservative. He is. That's what he says. And this could be, you know, pandering to a different crowd. Only his blog, the author, looks like That's what happened. The author said, oh, yeah, he's putting the screenshot where Donald Trump has him blocked. Is that the author, Elijah Daniel?
Yeah, yeah, it looks like he got blocked by the Trump. Oh, man, if I was Trump, I'd totally be exploiting this.
You know, he said...
There's great. An exploitation going on.
He said before that he could shoot a person and his numbers wouldn't drop at all. Maybe if he has a love affair with a bellboy, that could actually make his bring his poll numbers up.
Yeah. Huh.
For the right crowd.
This could be great. Yeah, I was reading about he recently decided to not participate in the GOP debate, which a bunch of people, I noticed a lot of my more political libertarian friends were like, oh, this will be great because, like, Rand Paul will be in there and we'll get to hear from him and stuff, and Trump is a coward and stuff. And I actually have to disagree. I think this is a good move strategically. He's totally, like, playing into that, like, machismo kind of attitude. It's like, yeah, I'm not going to participate in this. This is dumb. You guys are losers. Like, I don't know. It's totally, like, I feel like he's totally appealing to his base with that kind of attitude.
That's the usual move for the front runner in any election is not attend the debate, because he's the one who's got the most to lose. If it's true that he's leading, I'm not sure. I don't trust the polls, but at any rate, that could be the reason. I've seen that happen in elections elsewhere. I don't know if in the U.S., but elsewhere, in Mexico, in Latin America, the front runner won't usually attend the debates because he's got a big target sign for all the criticism and the scandalous comments, whatever people can throw at him.
I think you can get away with anything at this point, including shooting someone. I bet if he would have shot one of those ranchers that were shot by the feds earlier, he could have gotten away with it. People probably would have been cheering for it.
Probably. Even some libertarians, maybe.
Oh, probably.
You know, a couple of those.
I'm looking forward to the audiobook version of this. It looks like the author is going to hire a Donald Trump impersonator to read the audiobook version. Oh, I can't wait. So I guess the takeaway from this is any kind of art around Trump right now could be pretty lucrative. Go ahead, do some fun stuff, throw it up on Amazon, make some money out of this. I don't even know what to call this. This is like his performance art, you know? Like, this is Donald Trump's masterpiece running for president.
Would you call this fan art?
It's kind of, yeah, I don't know that this guy's a fan, but... but good idea.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
If only I had thought about this.
You know, you got it all, a love story with the boss and a billionaire and the pancakes.
Pancakes,
yeah.
Pretty hot. Pretty hot. So
I don't think it. Yeah, he's probably the only guy who can. It's like the whole Santorum thing. Do you remember that?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah, where they recoined the last name of that presidential candidate a few years ago. And turning into, I'm not gonna describe what it was supposed to mean, but the whole purpose was to make it some kind of scandal of that, given that he was very conservative, and this might actually work for Trump.
yeah. Unfortunately, that took away Santorum's ability to use the same strategy of Ron Paul 2008, where it was like Google Ron Paul. You couldn't really do Google Santorum. You wouldn't want that.
Well, you can't
Google Santorum. Whatever happened to him? I was hoping he'd come back.
He's digging up bodies of his ex-girlfriends or something.
It's kind of hard to recover from that.
It's amazing when your name can be made into something like that. I love the internet.
Literally. I wasn't I'm sure Rick Santorum doesn't, dig up torsos or anything.
It's like that phrase that when Barack Obama was asked about his middle name, Hussein, he explained that whoever gave him that name, well, wasn't expecting him to become the president of the United States. It's the same thing with Santorum. His mother and his grandmother and his grandfather weren't aware of what their name meant.
He couldn't help it.
Yeah, he couldn't help it.
But yeah, I mean, he was really, I really liked his sweater vest presence. Like, he was the only one rocking the sweater vest.
What's that? You're referring to Rick Santorum?
Rick Santorum, yeah.
Yeah, the sweater
very,
vest.
Very stylish. Very,
reminds that's saying he doesn't give a darn. He doesn't give a darn about the normal, you know, bourgeois fashion sense. He's taking down the man and showing us the path with that look. It's a very special look. I actually have no idea who's left in the race. I've just tried to black it all out of my mind. I just don't hear it, don't see it, don't feel it.
I mean, I might as well just give it to Trump at this point, because I don't even know who else is running. I just know about Trump. That's all I keep hearing about.
Are you a voter?
No.
Okay. Neither am I, so. So that, yeah, you
this
have
is like
to
one
know
of those rough
as little
things,
as
like
you have to, you just have to know as little as possible just to make fun of the candidates.
Yeah, right. I have a it's interesting how this is going to be. I was talking with a friend about maybe doing like a parody podcast, and it never ended up happening, but you can't parody this. This is such a self-parodying election year that, I mean, you can't compete with reality. This is crazy and hilarious and terrible, and I'm just amazed. Like, I'm sure you guys may be familiar with the movie Idiocracy.
I am, yes.
Yeah, this is, like, way funnier, but it's real life, so it's also, like, scarier.
Yeah, I mean, he's not president yet, and I hope he doesn't become president, yet. But he could be the Camacho of 2016.
He is Camacho, yeah. Like, I thought this was going to be a joke. Like, I didn't think it'd last this long. I was like, okay, very funny, Donald Trump. But, like, this has turned into a full-fledged thing. So,
yeah.
I want to read this book, and I want to hear the audiobook.
Fiction. Well, reality is more hilarious than fiction is. We'll be back after we go to the market.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends. My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CATMUF, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CATMUF, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
Meow, meow, meow. Meow. Meow.
Meow.
Meow.
And the fiends are back with Angela, MK, and myself, Hugo, from Mexico City. And we wanted to get away from all the Trump topic, and it's kind of it's proving hard to do, right, Angela?
It's excessively hard to do because I learned some fascinating bit of information on the comment thread. A David Eggie fan said that this is the beginning of the end. And, you know, usual kind of hysterical conspiracy kind of lizard people kind of way, which triggered someone to write. He also believes in lizard people. Granted, Trump exemplifies a certain lizard-like form, and that may be getting to the crux of it right there. This maybe the real story. We've dug deep now. We've found out, and now we know.
If you were a lizard,
well, it's good to
know. You probably wear a fake, a wig or something. That would explain a lot.
You'd have to hide his scaly skin.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, doesn't seem like he's going out of his way to really hide that aspect. That's kind of the disturbing part. It's just he's fine with you thinking he might be a lizard.
Homie needs to moisturize.
At least. Yeah, that's just one desiccated, sexy, desiccated, shriveled up, desiccated. Yeah, okay. I can afford the hell out of that.
I get it.
Yeah. So, more serious topic. I don't know how that I can segue to this, but I will. Prostitution and the whole hysteria surrounding sex trafficking, and I can remember sex trafficking being pretty much like the satanic panic thing. It's mostly a product of like non-governmental organizations and hysterical advocacy groups and women who clutch their pearls a lot, and people who don't have time to mind their own business obsess a lot. They claim there's a lot more sex trafficking than there is, and obviously any is not acceptable, but such is life. You can't make anything perfect, and that people are very, very, oh my God, sex trafficking, and they imagine all sorts of things. But Debbie Nathan, I think, was the name of the writer. I think she was writing for The Nation, probably The Village Voice, if I remember this correctly. I think tried debunking this, about a decade or two ago, at least. At the time, she was also writing about satanic panic. And this is, one of these weird situations where people project all their weird, anger and strange different beliefs on things into some kind of hysteria that they can wrap themselves around and feel like they've got a cause that's, that and it sums up everything. Everything is sex rings and sex trafficking. Mm-hmm. And what I sent you guys a link to was to the Rent Boy case, where basically they're trying, the government's trying to make this really strong case against the CEO of Rent Boy, which is a gay escort website that escorts can belong to so they can, find customers and, the right clients, screen their clients. And Maggie McNeil, who's a great libertarian writer, writes the blog The Honest Courtesan, calls this the new war on whores. And do Google her name if you get a chance. She's quite a good writer on this topic. And this is this direction things are going. And I'll just give you the quick thing here. The 3-count indictment against Jeffrey Herant, 51, by a federal grand jury in Brooklyn, New York, added money laundering charges not previously filed against the company founder in a criminal complaint in August. It reminded you that the only thing this guy is guilty of is running a website. I mean, there's nothing really here other than that. And people's, horror that somewhere there's some very, very attractive young gay man exchanging sex for money.
It's
right. The parallel to the Satanic Panic is a good one, because this is something that happened in, I guess it would have been the 80s and maybe some of the 90s, where people kind of got whipped into a frenzy about satanic ritual abuse occurring in daycares and things like that, and a bunch of people got indicted, and it turns out that it wasn't even real. It was completely fabricated by social workers and other people, and it ended up ruining a lot of people's lives. And this is why you have to be really skeptical when you come across these headlines that are all about, especially if there's references to these crusaders who are trying to save these, poor, oppressed prostitutes or whatever. I mean, these are people who are willingly participating in this. It doesn't seem like there's any exploitation going on here. It seems like they're all adults. And yeah, this indictment is trying to scare people off. And yeah, like you said, his only crime is running a website. But we know what happens to people who run websites that, are a little bit too radical.
And there is good money in fighting all that so-called abuse and trafficking of persons. But we'll talk more about that when we get back from the market. Not that kind of market, but the market. Meow.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Are you sick of peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
Meow, meow.
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 And we're back. And we're back from the market, the good old-fashioned market with regular things, nothing too extreme, like those products and services we're talking about now. And I wanted to talk about there's good money in fighting prostitution and pretending you're somehow fighting human trafficking human trafficking, the selling of exploitation of minors or grown-ups for sexual purposes or otherwise. And here in Mexico, where I live, where I'm broadcasting from, there's a senator that's actually made a career of that. And she's actually blocked resources and tried to get on the side money from organizations who are actually fighting the actual real human trafficking, which is real. And then you go ahead and read some of the headlines that there's thousands and thousands of people being trafficked, being sold and being brought from Eastern Europe, for example, here in Mexico. And it sure seems overblown. And I think it's the same case you were talking before with the satanic ritual scare of the 90s and 80s. It's the same thing, only we're calling this human trafficking instead of prostitution, which is a perfectly peaceful activity, I would say. What do you guys say?
Yeah, it's interesting how puritanical the underlying elements of this are, because a lot of this happens by NGOs and nonprofits and things like that who are, under the guise of kind of progressivism, actually. Like a lot of people on the left really participate in these things. Oh, it's like, oh, we have to save these people, these poor prostitutes are being oppressed. And while human trafficking does happen, it's a very, very small percentage. And this is something that it's very interesting that you've kind of seen the left take it on. And it really has the same kind of conservative underlying platform, I guess you could say. It's just a little bit remixed. But this is the fear of, I was like, oh, we have to protect people from themselves. We don't really, they can't be trusted to think on their own. They can't be trusted to take care of themselves. So we have to intervene in their lives. And then you end up wrecking someone's lives, and then they end up looking like heroes, basically. These is nonprofits and other people involved. And it's a pretty huge mess, because no one is pausing and saying, hey, what do the sex workers think about this? What is their opinion? Why don't we ask them? I know, crazy idea. Why don't we ask the people who are actually participating in this if they think it's exploitative?
Yeah. Here, what I've heard from people I know who've worked on those NGOs, I was using the Spanish acronym for that. NGOs sometimes they are threatened. Sex workers are threatened with prostitution charges, and they're offered the out of being snitches for their pimps or their whoever is organizing the prostitution business, and to go to the police and say, I was actually being trafficked. They brought me under false pretenses. And they would surely say that, as they're giving, the only alternative that they're being given is to go to jail for prostitution. So it's pretty easy to get a confession or get a some kind of testimony from a sex worker if you threaten him or her with jail.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll do that. And another thing I was thinking is this is one of those businesses, or illegal businesses, or gray market things where you can't really get anywhere if you're not in cahoots with the government. And when they bring in people, and this happens even in Mexico, when they bring in women from Eastern Europe to work as topless dancers or even prostitutes, that which is less common. Even so, they gotta have somebody to arrange paperwork. They have to have somebody to have the police look the other way, and work. If you want to start up a business here in Mexico, you'll get a lot of regulations that you have to follow. Even if you don't actually follow them all, they're on the books. But you need to find somebody to look the other way, to bribe the right people, to grease palms, in order to have this business move forward. And I would think that the government has a larger than usual responsibility with this, even if these so-called problems are being painted as these horrible things. Even so, the government, I don't think they could be able to solve it. They're actually into it.
Well, and it's interesting because in the case of rentboy.com, the CEO who was just brought up on these kind of ridiculous charges, and one of them is money laundering, which is something that is so easy to be charged with nowadays for, if you don't file the right paperwork, you can get one of these charges thrown at you. But this put things more out in the open and actually made it safer for escorts who did want to participate in this. So they had policies banning escorts under the age of 18. They tried to make this a safer space to have this kind of, to participate in this kind of industry. And by keeping it underground and forcing it, to be pushed into the underground, you do wind up with a lot more dangerous situations. And this is kind of what happens. I mean, it's not that these NGOs need to be going after this like rampant sex trafficking or anything. It's that the laws are so skewed against escorts. It obviously isn't something that should be illegal. These are consenting adults involved, and that's perfectly fine. Just because it doesn't fit into your paradigm of what's moral or right or whatever, there's no reason to use violence to stop people from doing this.
It's important
from making a living.
Yeah, it's important to know that we're not necessarily saying this is a good thing. It's just that this is a peaceful thing, non-violent thing that's people should be able to engage in and work these kind of jobs without being harassed or put into prison or being fined or any of those initiations of violence. We're not necessarily saying this is good. Only this is not aggressive. And this doesn't deserve any kind of violent response from the government or anybody else. At least that's what we're saying.
Yeah, right. Totally. And again, this is safer when it's done through things like websites, and you have more kind of safeguards put in place with private industry and the people who are participating in this. It's a little more out in the open. I'm not sure. I haven't been on these sites, but I'm not sure if there's some kind of reputation system involved or what other types of protections there are, but I imagine it's a lot safer to participate in if this is an industry that you need to do as your occupation than other routes you could take.
This brings to mind the whole Silk Road thing that happened a year ago or a little bit more,
mm-hmm.
Where there were actually market ways to provide some, as they would say, questionable goods, but without violence, without the risk of being mugged or stabbed or shot on a dark alley. And instead of thanking the market for that advancement, for that innovation, the government just went ahead and shut it down. It's the same thing. You know what's really risky? To be a prostitute out on the streets. That would be way riskier than being registered in some kind of website.
Yeah, there are a lot of ways technology makes these things safer. And yeah, there are dark corners of the internet, there are dark parts to it, but something like Silk Road or Rent Boy is making the transfer of these goods and services a lot safer for both sides you know, both parties participating. And this is something that should be allowed to flourish, just like other parts of the internet are allowed to flourish.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, I don't see a trend in freedom in this direction, unfortunately. There's still a lot of very conservative notions embedded in the larger culture, you know, against these kinds of services, because people aren't taking the time to really think this through a little bit more. They're just kind of following what these government agencies or NGOs are saying about how terrible it is, and, you know, where are these saviors who are coming in and helping them, and people don't look a little bit closer into it.
I think if you disagree on these things being done, there's a lot of ways where you could perhaps offer alternatives if it really is a problem for you, for anybody, that these people are into this kind of jobs. Well, the most you can do is to offer alternatives if somehow you disagree. What you cannot do is, you know, force people into leaving their lines of their selected lines of work, their freely chosen lines of work. What do you say?
Yeah. This is a great alternative, like we've been saying, and it's just sad to see progress happening so slowly in this area compared to other social change we've kind of seen. I think we've seen a lot of progress in the past 50 years compared to, you know, where we were back then. You know, socially, we've seen a lot of progress, and it's been really great for a lot of people, a lot of marginalized people, but in this specific area, it still seems very, I don't know, do you guys think it's kind of behind compared to other social progress we've seen?
I would say so. What about you, Angela? Are we left back?
You know, it's hard to get, it's like we make certain steps forward, certain steps back in different ways. It's not something that's so clearly a linear, like I can't answer that as a strictly yes or no. Depends what people mean by social progress. For example, you know, gay marriage, I mean, there's some real upsides to that, but there's been some, you know, downsides to that, too. I mean, you know, forcing a bourgeois institution, making it more institutionalized, and I'm sorry, I didn't say that really in a very articulate way, that, you know, just, you know, reinforcing all the negatives of a marriage as part of a certain kind of structures, you know, hasn't necessarily always been a good thing, and may not be necessarily a good thing for gay culture, if there is such a thing. There may be just many cultures, but no, I just can't answer those in a linear way.
Yeah, but you could
sum up, sum down.
Yeah, now that you're saying this, I'm thinking you could say probably now that there is a respectable, I'm putting this in air quotes, respectable way for gay people to engage in gay sex and gay practices, then it's easier for them to ban, you know, the other not so respectable practices, right? We'll be back.
Yeah, we'll talk about it when we come back.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Meow, 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 meow,
meow. Meow. Freedom Fiends coming back from the market. And we were just talking about sex workers and how they are oppressed, and kind of the rate of acceptance. It's maybe slowed down behind certain other social progress we've kind of seen in other areas. For example, I think it's good that it's more socially acceptable and people are more tolerant of gay people. And we were kind of talking a little bit about gay marriage at the end of the last segment. I'm not a huge fan of marriage in general. I don't know that the state attaching all these privileges to it is necessarily a good thing, and I don't know why anyone would get married kind of out, you know, for those kinds of reasons. I mean, I'm divorced now, and I did do that. I did get married, but I don't really view it as something that it's kind of almost a domesticating thing, you know. It just I don't know that it's something that I'm interested in doing again. And I do think it does illustrate positive social progress, but not in the best way, I guess. Like, I'd rather there be just more social acceptance for alternative lifestyles than codifying it into law and saying, oh, well, you know, it's not enough that society accepts you. Now the state has to accept you. And now, you know, it's really legitimate.
I think that the state beats everyone against each other. And while you were saying this, that there had to be more acceptance of alternative lifestyles, I would say too that the fact that the state is beating conservative people against more, if I would say, use this word, progressive or I don't know, open people in certain ways, also works against people who follow conservative values, because other people feel attacked also by that. If you're, I don't know, a gay man or a gay woman or a poly couple, you wouldn't have to feel threatened by people who are so-called into a vanilla marriage, you know, a man and a woman, and, you know, conservative values, getting married, having children, the whole thing. But once the state gets into it, then it's everybody's problem.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on this, Angela?
I don't know if I can sum up my thoughts in like a segment. It might be like an insane like 2-hour ramble. Yeah, I don't know.
We have another hour.
I mean, it's complicated. Obviously, I don't want the state, you know, I don't want the state involved in anything. It's just a given. But that doesn't like necessarily reflect on what I think about marriage. I mean, marriage is pre-political. I mean, families formed, married, you know, weddings and, you know, the rituals of, you know, becoming a family occurred long before there was ever a state. And that's one of the most ordinary things people do is, you know, and that everyone, you know, that everyone does in some form or another. So I mean, it's not like the family is going to wither and die if the state steps away from it. And I'm not sure why conservatives, like, you know, give the state so much value and, attribute so much importance to the state over, let's say, the word of God, which doesn't make any sense to me. It's almost like it's like idolatry. So I don't see a role for the state here, but I don't see a role for state in anything. So it's kind of always the easy answer.
Right.
That's
right.
My answer too. So yeah, probably an easy answer. Yeah, it is. How about,
Go ahead.
So how about we privatize everything? Just to use the word. I had to get it in before the end of the hour.
I would just like to get government out of everything, and I kind of don't care how that's done, and whether we privatize everything. I mean, that has certain benefits, but I'd like to just see how things would organize on their own, absent of any state. I think there's a lot of different ways you could go about that. But, you know, it'd make for an interesting experiment. It's hard to do that. It's hard to, we have a lot of conversations where we kind of imagine what this would be like. And it is kind of hard to do that when you are constantly having a state that's clamping down on you for having a website, you know, to help other people support themselves or anything like that. Or they're going to, you know, shoot you for standing up for something you believe.
Trump. Yes, I say worms to that, and I think we can do it, but we'll do it after we go to the market for our two worms.
Worms.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Meow. Meow, meow, meow.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon high atop Financial Beats Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a FIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at FIPCOT.org. I'm MK Lords, and I am joined for hour two of the Freedom Fiends with Angela, Keaton, and Hugo. How are you guys doing?
Hello. Doing fine.
Great.
Doing fine.
Excellent.
Kind of warm for...
Kind of warm.
Yeah, it's still... Well, you know, it's winter here, but it's still warm most of the time.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying living in San Diego, actually. This is great. I love how warm it is. So I'm not sure. How far is Mexico City away from San Diego?
Well, it's it's very far. I don't know, probably it's a 20-hour drive. But
okay, yeah, because it's kind of on the other side. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah, it's really far, so, yeah, far away. But
I'm close to Tijuana. I've been thinking about jumping over there and checking it out sometime.
Yeah, you should do that. It's not the way they paint it in, you know, From Dusk Till Dawn or apocalyptic vampire movies. It's just a regular city. It's not an American city, but it's just a regular Mexican city. You'll be fine.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you will.
So last segment, we were kind of talking about a little bit about outrage, and we talked a bit about the satanic panic of the 1980s. And I think you kind of see this theme of people being outraged on behalf of others over things that are maybe a little bit blown out of proportion. You still see this happening a lot today. And I came across this article on ABC News, and the headline is, Miami doctor accused of attacking Uber driver calls it, quote, the biggest mistake of my life. And this woman was a doctor in Florida. She's captured on video lashing out at an Uber driver in downtown Miami. And she was getting pretty, she got a little pushy with him and was yelling at him. And, you know, it's possible she may have been drunk or something, but she said she was having a really bad day. She just broke up with her boyfriend. And, you know, she obviously didn't make the best choices in treating this person like this. But what happened with her was people decided to... that they would take justice into their own hands. And this happens a lot whenever one of these videos kind of leaks out and it kind of goes public. And while it's obviously unacceptable behavior, I don't know that the response, sending her death threats and things like that, was really warranted. I think this kind of, the internet is awesome. I mean, I talk about it all the time. It's an amazing tool, but it does allow you to raise up a mob pretty quickly and point in the direction of people who maybe made poor choices that were unfortunately caught on public, but or caught, you know, on camera and put out into the public, but maybe they didn't completely deserve that. And, you know, maybe it does come down to this is between her and the Uber driver that she attacked.
Yeah, there's this tendency where the collective, we get outraged and feel somehow entitled to go ahead and harass people over the internet over things that are really not our problem. And, you know, that makes all the whole thing with conflict resolution way harder. It's like trying to stop a fight where everybody's cheering around and telling you to beat the other guy.
Yeah.
Only over Facebook.
Right, right. Well, in this case, her address was leaked, so she was a victim of something called doxing. And doxing is when your private information is made publicly available to people on the internet and, you know, posted in a lot of places, and that opens you up to a bombardment of harassment and threats. And to me, it's almost It's almost like swatting someone, where you make a fake call to the SWAT team on someone and have them be raided. I mean, you're opening someone up who, granted, maybe didn't make the best decisions, but maybe they're not that terrible of a person. Maybe she was just having a bad day and kind of, you know, I'm sure we've all not been at our best and we wouldn't want a camera pointed on us during that. But yeah, they put her address out there and she was subjected to a bunch of death threats, and you don't really know who you're dealing with when you release that information to the public like that.
Yeah,
there are people out there who will just, you know, send death threats and not really mean them. And then there are crazy people who might actually stalk you, or, you know, they have your location. That's very scary. And that's, again, I view it very similar to swatting someone.
Yeah, some people, those people actually exist. And while the people would tell you they're going to kill you, rape you this night, well, most of them are just trolls, maybe, but there's the occasional one. And what are you supposed to do? Can you go to the police with these things? And I would never go to the police. That's one rule of mine. But if you were that kind of person, would you go to the police and say, you know, I got these all these messages and violent tweets or Facebook messages telling me they're gonna hurt me, and would they take it seriously? I don't know. I'd say not.
See, that's kind of the thing. I would think they wouldn't take it seriously. And this has kind of happened before. This has kind of been brought up in other areas where there's been harassment taking place. I actually came across this article on Vice today called "Canada's First Twitter Harassment Trial Sets a Scary Precedent for Women." And the article's pretty interesting, and it talks about these women who are harassed by this guy on Twitter, and he would post information about where she was at and where she was going, and he was trolling her, and he was not making overt threats, but, you know, trying to scare her in various ways. And the court ruled that she didn't really have any recourse in this, her and the other woman who were suing this person. And so this is kind of interesting. The judge was, I mean, clearly doesn't understand how Twitter works, and found the guy not guilty. And I don't know where the line is on some of this stuff. I don't want people being harassed. I do think the internet is real life, and that people who are making threats on it, you don't know how serious their threats are. If they're posting about where you're at, though, and things like that, I mean, that gets very close to stalking. And if you can, you know, if your only recourse right now is using the state to protect you from a stalker, then, you know, people are going to use that if they feel that they're being stalked on the internet.
That would be yet another step in the escalation of this. Reading the article, they actually resolved the thing pretty friendly way. I'm quoting, "We actually settled while we were out there. I paid for the damages and I apologized to him and he accepted my apology." That's what this woman is saying. So the whole thing came afterwards. Yeah. And if somebody calls the police and the police gets involved, then it's another step in escalation. Somebody could get shot or killed or beat up.
Right. I'm very concerned with how ineptly these stalkings and other forms of harassment are handled by the police when you do complain and you say that you feel that you're being threatened by someone. This even happens now if you try to get a restraining order against someone who's violent. Sometimes they're not very protective at all. A lot of times they aren't. And
well, you have to ponder.
It's clear that the state fails at protecting people, which is kind of, if you believe in a smaller state, that should be one of its only functions.
And you have to ponder. You have to make that decision, which you shouldn't have to make. Is, do I risk more violence or a more complicated situation by denouncing this thing or going to the police? That's a decision when you want to protect yourself or keep yourself from harm. That's a decision you shouldn't be making. You know, I should be able to defend myself or find a way to avoid harm without being all worried that this could mean more harm and more violence and more escalation. That's that's really bad. And that's one of, as you were saying, one of the failures of the state when dealing with those things. What could we do?
Yeah. It can be really hard, especially if you live in an area where you know your right to protect yourself has kind of been legislated away, and
here
your only option really is, like, you know, I have to call the state. Like, I just moved to California, and I know Angela's probably familiar with this too, the firearms laws are pretty strict here, and you know, there's a part of me that I don't want to have to carry a firearm to protect myself. You know, I did for several years, but it's not something. I'm not opposed to people having guns. I'm very pro people having guns and defending themselves. Just philosophically, it's not a tool that I maybe want to carry much anymore. But I would like the option. You know, I don't want to be outright banned from defending myself. And I think in the case where you're dealing with a violent stalker, that becomes more of a necessity to have something that can meet the force of that attacker. If, again, like you can, it might be beneficial in some ways, you know, at least putting a police report out there so there's some kind of precedent, like in the rare case that they can pursue this person. But yeah, it's very, it's still very dangerous, and you know, they don't all, the restraining orders don't always work. And again, this was something she may be losing her job over this, you know, this woman's life was, you know, practically ruined. And she resolved the conflict herself with the driver, because, and this is, you know, ultimately it's up to the person who is wronged in these situations to deal with the whatever type of restitution that you know they want from the situation.
And that was offered by her, and well, at least that's what the article says. She offered restitution. Restitution was accepted. That should be the end of it, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, I think I agree. What could we do to stop it? Just not engaging ourselves in those such behaviors?
Well, I mean, yeah, it seemed like she was kind of having a bad day, and you know, I think people do maybe are trending towards controlling themselves a little bit better, because you never know who's filming now. Anyone could be filming for any reason and putting that on the internet, and that's just an unfortunate reality that we face now, that everyone has a camera on their phone. So while I don't want anyone to not feel like they can freely express themselves, it's just something you could be more aware of, maybe. Yeah, just be aware, if you're having a bad day and you're about to lose it, like, try to hold on. At least make sure no one's filming.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
Meow!
Meow!
Meow, freedom fiends!
Meow!
Worms!
we were talking about alternatives to the state, and punching people as one way to kind of manage bad situations. We were joking about this on the break a little bit, because this Miami doctor, she had a bad day. She freaked out on an Uber driver, and I think we all have days where we want to punch people.
I think so.
You shouldn't do it. Don't do it. Like, don't punch people. But it can be hard, and some people, you know, maybe they deserve a good punching. It's not very non-aggression principle of me.
Oh, I want to punch. I want to punch people all the time. I want to punch people I work with, and I like them, and I punch lots of people. No, I want to punch people. It's just keeping the self-control and maintaining the discipline not to. That's my focus in my daily life, is control and discipline over these impulses of where I want to punch people who deserve to be punched.
What are the things that make you want to punch people? Like, what is it that they do where you're just like, I just want to punch someone?
Oh, there's just a whole range of human things that make me want to punch people. People being people. People thinking like people. People doing people things. Yeah, that's all of those things every day.
Well,
I just, no.
We all
no,
feel bad.
I punch.
I punch. It bothers me. I won't punch someone over this, but I get kind of, you know, irked if I'm behind someone who has more than 10 items in the little 10 items or less line. Infuriating. Like, why? Little things. Yeah, it's the little things. And I feel like that's what happened with this doctor, is the little things that added up over time, and she just lost it one day. She's like, screw it. It's punching time.
It's called frustration.
And unfortunately, the Uber guy was there.
Yeah, you gotta take responsibility for that. And she said she did. But the thing is, punching is, we all feel the need to punch somebody at some point. And, you know, depends on how physical you are as a person. Some people won't ever get that urge. I get it very, very seldom. But I do. And we all subscribe to the non-aggression principle. But, you know, if you punch somebody, it's not that bad. The worst thing that you can get back is two punches, right? As retribution?
Yeah. We're obviously just joking about the punching thing. We're, you know.
The libertarian principle would be two punches for a punch.
There are certain people who have punchable faces. Yeah, yeah. It's I wouldn't want to punch anyone. I'd be afraid what they would do back, for sure. Donald Trump, very punchable face.
Ooh, yeah.
Very punchable face.
Want to punch those.
Sarah Palin, very punchable face. All of them.
Well, you could always make, you know, paint their faces on something that you can punch, a punch bag or, you know, some big... some cushion, or you can just make them in the shape and form, general shape, and with the face of those politicians that you want to punch.
And there you
never
go.
Say in public that
this
you want to punch.
This could be a thing.
Them.
Yeah. Has someone thought of this? Punching pillows with politicians' faces on them? I feel like that should be a thing if it's not already.
That should be a thing.
Someone make this happen.
I can feel a new Freedom Fiends button over this.
Yeah. This could happen. Well, the time to do it's now. If you want to make money, obviously.
Yeah.
So
the only hard thing is to make out who's gonna be on the race by you know, a month from now.
Right, right. I feel like they'll retain their punchability even after they drop out, though.
Yeah, you can think about, you know, former presidents or, you know, lesser known congressmen, and you still want to punch them.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like George W. Bush is just asking to be punched. Like both of the Clintons. All of them. I mean, going way back.
Yeah. You can go all the way back to the beginning of the 20th century.
Yeah. Yep, yep. But we're not going to be punching anyone. There are ways to resolve things. You know, usually you can talk stuff out. Or just not engage with an unreasonable person. That's what I kind of stopped doing. I used to get into arguments on Facebook sometimes. And they're really draining, and it's just kind of like, where am I going with this? What am I doing? And Angela and I were actually kind of talking about this earlier, you know, internet feuds and stuff and people fighting on the internet. And it's kind of an exercise in futility because you're not arguing with the person. You're arguing with the brand that they've created. And the brand, it's not even the brand that they think they've created. It's the brand you think they've created.
So here are the Freedom Fiends punching with our words, not with our fists.
Exactly.
Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Meow, meow, meow. Meow, meow. Freedom Fiends. The Fiends are back from market. And we already talked about punching. And it's Angela and MK Lords and Hugo from Mexico. That's me. And we were talking in the break. We, you know, fiction and art always... I would say always imitates reality. And Angela, you were talking to us about a couple movies or a movie that you were recommending to us. Which one was that?
I've been trying to watch as many movies as I can lately. But two recent movies that are recently out that I do like quite a bit, two entirely different movies, but both based on things that actually happened. One is The Big Short, and that is about the housing bubble. In 2007. It's highly recommended to anyone in the listening audience and to our other hosts on The Fiends. The other movie I saw recently that I thought was really, really good, it was based on, there's many similar stories like this, that things that have happened in real life. The movie's called Room. I don't want to say too much about it, but it is based on a certain kind of a criminal act. It's disturbing, and it was a very, very well done movie. I'm often really critical of dramas, but this is really, really good. And I would go out and see it's up for a bunch of awards. So I'm, those are my, the extent of my movie reviews this week. I'll have some better ones soon.
Cool. So could you tell us a little bit more about The Big Short?
Yeah, it does a really good job. I mean, it's done in very comedic style. The acting is really well done. It also explains the concepts to the viewer, because it does not assume that you already have a real knowledge of what happened in 2007 or what led up to it. But it explains it really, really well. And it's important. And anyone who's interested in kind of libertarian economic theory, or anyone who kind of follows people like Ron Paul's work, then this sort of movie is very helpful in understanding kind of, you know, why libertarians take certain stances and why we want less government and less stupidity in the marketplace.
Yeah, and there were several people who were warning about this before it happened and were saying, you know, the housing market's about to crash, it's this giant bubble, get out. And then at the same time, the opposite was happening. There was all this hype around it, and it was like, oh yeah, everyone get in, this is the time to be buying a house. And It's really, really tragic what happened. I know, you know, my parents were affected by that, and I didn't own a house at the time. I wasn't affected by it, but I know a lot of people were, and still recovering. I mean, people are still suffering through this. So I haven't seen any serious movies lately. I just saw The Hateful Eight, which I highly recommend against seeing. It was the crappiest Tarantino movie I think I've ever seen. And I have high standards for Tarantino. I like that crazy, comical, over-the-top violence stuff. But this was just ridiculous. It was ridiculously long and boring and just... I mean, obviously Tarantino movies are going to be unnecessarily violent, but this one was just... no one stood a chance. It wasn't interesting like Kill Bill, where there was interesting choreographed scenes. It was just people shooting each other. Spoiler alert, Jim Jesus and I talked about this. Another host on Freedom Fiends, we argued about it on his show, The Lulberts, and he's wrong. And... just want to clarify. I was kind of giving him a little bit of... a little bit of crap about it, but it was a funny discussion. But I want to check out The Big Short. I'd like to check out Room too. That looks really interesting. It looks like it's a bit of a thriller, and it's you know.
I'll check those out too.
It's well done. It's very subtly done too. It's disturbing and scary for almost what it doesn't show as well. It doesn't over-explain. It lets you use your imagination. It's not as ham-fisted as a lot of movies that are supposed to be suspense thrillers. Which I is kind what of like I really stuff liked. Like that. Really, yeah.
Yeah, the kind of subtlety.
Some things happening to me for a few years since I became a libertarian a long time ago. And it's that I tend to find libertarian themes on every movie I watch. It kind of grows old because I'm pretty sure most of them aren't even there. I just find them, put them into the plot just because that's the way I'm watching the movie. Does this happen to you?
Sometimes I see it. Yeah, it looks like I'm kind of reading a little bit about just a summary of Room right now, and it is Room, not The Room. That's a totally different movie. That's also a drama, but like an accidental drama. It's more of kind of a very poorly made comedy. But Room is more serious, and it's basically a woman that was held captive for years, and her son was held captive too, and they finally gained their freedom. So I think it probably would have some kind of libertarian themes or anarchist themes. I mean, being able to break free from any kind of containment you have. I mean, it's a very liberating thing, and it's very, it's a core thing for any anarchist or any person who wants other people to be free too.
Yeah, I immediately think of those cases that have been out in the news for some years now where this guy probably had a woman or three women hidden in a basement for 20 years and had children and everything. That's what comes to mind when I read the synopsis for this movie, for the Room movie. The one that's not called The Room, but just Room. I'm guessing that's... That's probably the plot, but... It is
crazy. I mean, that when, especially when this stuff kind of happens in real life.
I decided not to go to the movies in theaters for some months, but I'm trying to catch up on old Netflix or torrents or whatever I can get my hands on for old movies, for really good old movies. There's a whole segment of the 60s that I have no idea. And actors, very good actors that I've simply haven't seen much of them, and I'm trying to catch up on that. I don't know, Marlon Brando and Warren Beatty, those guys.
Yeah. I mean, the classics are always good. I don't get a lot of time to watch movies. I feel a little behind with some of the movie discussion. Like I said, I saw Hateful Eight, but I don't get to see a lot of movies. But it is always interesting. I'm always glad to find original ones because it seemed like for a while, I kind of stopped watching movies for a while because it seemed like a lot of them were just remakes.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, we're going to remake this movie from 20 years ago. And that's, all fine and good. People are going to go see it. People are going to make money off of that. But I like to see a little more originality and, original plot lines and stuff like that. So.
Or.
Check these out.
Yeah, or they make animated versions of old movies, or they just put out just the smallest of twists on the original movie and then release a new movie about it. Yeah, it's not been too creative.
Yeah.
For some years
now. But it works, I guess.
And it works better than
see it.
It's better than watching the news, or it gets me less angry than watching the news.
Yeah, I heard that they're remaking Rocky Horror Picture Show.
That would be nice.
But it's going to be more of like a TV series. So, or a mini series, not really a TV series. Let me just confirm that really quick. Because, I love Rocky Horror Picture Show. And I was hoping no one would remake it. I got very mixed feelings about remakes. Most of the time I'm just like, don't do it. Like, I just want the original. But, people are going to do it anyway. it's kind of a reboot. So it's kind of, I'm kind of curious to see. It's like, I don't want to see it, but I kind of do.
Yeah, so. It's, I don't know if it's,
It's by Fox.
I know what that is, but yeah, sometimes I don't want to watch that remake, but I end up watching it anyway. Even though you know probably the movie is going to be like The Hobbit. The movie is just going to be too long in three parts where the book is 100 pages long. And yeah, but you end up seeing the movie anyway. That's it's kind of hard. Sometimes what I do is I do tend to find these libertarian themes or anarchist themes that get me through the movie. So they become more tolerable. I'm not being able to say that. Tolerable.
I just enjoy well-written dialogue. It really bothers me when I go to a movie that, you know, maybe the plot's okay, but the dialogue's really cheesy. It's like, yes. It's kind of like it doesn't matter what kind of principles are behind it or if there is any kind of overarching libertarian theme. Like, if the dialogue's bad, it's just bad and I can't watch it. So, I'm kind of curious dialogues. About this Rocky Horror reboot. Like, it could be interesting. Tim Curry's going to be narrating it. He's going to be the criminologist narrator. So,
there's always some good classics. I like Shawshank Redemption. I like that one by there's Morgan Freeman there, and I really like that one. I watched it a couple times, and some others. And you rewatch them after some years, and they tell you different things.
True. Yeah. There are some movies that I like to go back and rewatch, and then I see, you know, a little something different every time. So, the other Room movie, that one, I've only seen once. I've seen clips of it several times, but I've seen it all the way through once, and that's just, it's totally different from the one Angela mentioned. It's totally bizarre. Have you guys ever seen that one, The Room?
The Room.
No,
I haven't seen that. I've seen Panic Room.
This is like a movie that was made. It's so absurd. It's one of the very strangest movies you'll ever see. It was meant to be a drama, but it's so poorly written, and the acting was so bad. It came off as very low budget, and Tommy Wiseau was the guy who created it. He starred in it, he directed it, and he wrote it. And he's this mysterious guy who kind of came out of nowhere. His backstory is there's not really one that exists. It's just kind of like he came out of nowhere with a bunch of money and decided to make this movie, and it's terrible. Like, there's no consistent, like, there's kind of a consistent plot, but there's all of these other plots that start and, like, never finish, and it's so disjointed, and the dialogue is just really cheesy.
It's consistently bad.
Up clips. Yeah, it's consistently bad. And so much so that he changed it, because like people made fun of it, that it became kind of like a cult classic. They were like, this is like the worst movie ever made. And so it was so hilarious how bad it was. People started watching it as a comedy. So he changed it from drama to dark comedy.
Involuntary comedy.
It was like, meant to be serious.
Yeah, I actually did watch a bit of it now that I remember. How could I forget?
Yeah, it's very silly.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Hey, this is Squizzcar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so... There you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Bipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And ask me about my worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1 1/4 inch. Now they're 1 3/4 inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Meow, 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 meow. Meow, meow, meow. Meow. Meow.
Right?
Meow.
We are the Freedom Fiends, and we're back from the market, and I got this amazing thing from the market. Well, I don't have it yet, but I might have to get me one. I'm going to drop some mad science on you guys. There's this water bottle, I kid you not, it's totally real, that turns air into drinking water.
Wow.
And, okay, this sounded too good to be true. I saw it earlier. I saw, like, a video, and I was like, this has got to be fake. I, like, checked the date. I was like, it's not April. It's not April Fool's. Like, but I don't know. I was skeptical. So I looked into it, and, yeah, it's this. It's called Fontus, and the article I'm looking at is on Tech Insider. And this is amazing. So it's a water bottle that takes the water molecules in the air and it's basically the condensation of the humidity in the air, and it goes through this series of hydroponic teeth, which look like toothbrush bristles, and it turns the water vapor into droplets. And then there's a small solar panel on the top of the Fontus that keeps a battery charged. Now, this is cool. Now, it doesn't make a whole lot of water. This is the first prototype of this. The inventor says the bottle works best between 86 degrees and 104 degrees Fahrenheit and between 80 and 90% humidity. So, and over the course of an hour, it can produce about a half a quart of water. So this would be good if you're in more tropical climates. If you're like back where I was from, if you're back in, you know, Florida, this might be good if you're going hiking or something like that. That's more humid areas.
That's enough to survive on too. You know, half a quart in an hour?
Yeah. I mean, I get dehydrated pretty easily, and I usually carry a water bottle with me, but once I run out, it's like always a matter of, it depends on where I'm at, whether I can refill it. And this is just awesome. The guy's going to be launching a crowdfunding campaign soon to bring this to the market, and he wants to get the price under $100, which is pretty awesome for, I mean... So again, like it's going to work better in certain climates, and it filters out some contaminants, but not everything. It still needs to be in fairly clean air to produce drinking water. But yeah, this is some fascinating stuff.
When you were describing it, it with this little peaks and the battery, it sounds to me like those air purifiers that precipitate dust particles. Only in this case, it's droplets. So probably, yeah, probably if the air is too dirty, it will also precipitate the dirt particles in the air. So it will come out rather dirty. But that's the important thing.
It has a bit of a filter. Yeah, this is the first model, and it does have, you know, some water purification elements, but it's meant to be a little more simple, and, you know, it doesn't get everything out. So it's going to be about as clean, a little... cleaner than the air around it. So some areas it's not going to be the best in, but I think this could be great potential for people who don't have access to clean water. Maybe, you know, maybe if the technology gets a little better, I mean, that it can produce half a quart in an hour in the right climate, I think is pretty amazing. So this is, you know, the positive side of tech, the non-internet outrage machine side. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, could benefit a lot of people.
Yeah, the same computer technology that brings you doxing on Facebook also brings you the ability to make these life-saving devices. I can think of it being used in a place like where I come from, originally Venezuela, which is pretty tropical and it's pretty poor right now. It didn't used to be the case, but right now it's pretty poor. And there's absolutely no way you can get a waterborne disease if you're bringing the water from the air, from just condensed air. You're basically making distilled water with some dust from the air, which is pretty encouraging. I'm pretty optimistic about such things.
It makes me want to do the opposite of punch people, which is hug them.
Exactly. So. Does this happen to you too, Angela? Does it bring any joy?
No, and there's no hugging.
I don't hug. It's a rare thing. That's not necessary. Touching.
But you do drink water, right?
I do drink water. Not all the time, but I do drink water.
Hey, this is the market at work.
And she gives fiends. A mean fist bump, though.
Yeah. We love the market. Hey, thanks to you. Thanks, MK, and thanks, yeah. Angela, for being with me in this episode.
You. It's been great.
Yeah.
Everybody have a good
hanging
afternoon.
Hanging out over the airwaves.
Enjoy your Saturday. Or...